going to make the case that the ancient Roman Empire is in some ways more relevant than ever. Not because of the grammar, but because the big, hot-button debates that occupy the political stage today, state security, civil liberties, terrorism, those exact same issues obsessed the ancient Romans.
What the Romans are doing is they are living in a big city. It's a million people. It's a state which has already got a large empire, and they are facing up to the issues of how you run that empire, how you guarantee the liberty of the individual, what it means to be a citizen. And they have some of the most enlightening ways of talking about that that there are, even if we don't actually want to copy them.
This is Mary Beard. She's probably the most famous living classicist. She's a Cambridge Don who's a familiar figure in England on TV and radio. And her newest project is a giant history of the Roman Empire. It's called SPQR, the abbreviation for the Senate and the Roman People. And it begins with one of the most famous episodes in Roman history. 63 AD, Marcus Tullius Cicero, the renowned philosopher and orator, has been elected consul of Rome when he uncovers just what the FBI is always warning us about.
Cicero discovers, or claims to have discovered, a terrorist plot to overthrow the state, led by, in Cicero's view, a drunken gambling renegade aristocrat called Catiline. And Cicero collects intelligence, he intercepts letters, and eventually he faces Catiline down in the Senate and says, "You're wanting to destroy the state. Get out." What happens then is that Cicero rounds up the people he believed to be Catiline's accomplices, and he executes them without trial, even though they were Roman citizens.
Was this normal?
One of the absolute foundations of Roman citizenship was the right to a fair trial. Oh. So this was flouting that basic civil liberty.
So this is even worse than disappearing somebody to a black site.
Yes, but it's on the spectrum. It's on the same spectrum. But to start with, Cicero is hailed and everybody's delighted. The plot has been overthrown. But shortly, doubts start to emerge about the legality of it. And within a couple of years, Cicero finds himself in exile on the charge of having put Roman citizens to death without trial. Mm. And it's a wonderful moment of a kind of puzzle and conflict that we still face, which is, how far is it legitimate to suspend civil liberties in order to protect the state from plot or terrorism? And I think what's kind of moving about it in a way is that the Romans didn't get that sorted out. They were as puzzled as we are. We don't know. You know, when the British government decides to eradicate, that's another kind of horrible euphemism, eradicate a British citizen fighting in Syria for so-called ISIS, mm-hmm. we still have debates about whether that was a legitimate thing to do. And I think anybody who thinks that they've got it sorted is kidding themselves.
The thing is, we don't often debate them with reference to what happened in ancient Rome, and perhaps we should. Are there lessons to be learned, or is that too simplistic?
I think in some ways it's a bit simplistic. I mean, I think people are always wanting, or classicists like me are always wanting to show that there are real lessons to be learned from the Romans. They're never quite as simple as people would like to make out. We're living in a very, very different world. But I think what there is in Roman history, it's a kind of consciousness-raising device. You know, as we read Cicero, as we think about the conundrums and the puzzles that they faced, we can learn to think about our own difficulties and conflicts, I think, rather more deeply. I mean, it's true, we don't usually refer to Cicero when we talk about issues of terrorism. It is still striking to me that the very first words of Cicero's first speech, in which he denounced Catiline, quousque tandem, how long, Catiline, will you go on abusing our patience? Those words are still used in political debate.
Wait, really?
Ted Cruz used them to attack Obama.
One of the things that they dealt with, grappled with so much in the Roman Empire, which is such a contemporary issue for us too, it seems to me, is issues about power and the limits of power. You know, the fact that we even have conversations today about tyranny, about dictators. I mean, in some ways, didn't that conversation begin with the ancient Romans?
Yes, and you know, the assassination of Julius Caesar, who made himself notoriously dictator for life, and dictator's a Roman word, is the most famous political assassination of all time. You know, that in a sense the model of political killing.
We know that story from Shakespeare, of course, which is probably the version most of us sort of have in the back of our minds, but what actually happened?
Well, it was much even messier than the way Shakespeare tells it. You got a group of dissidents, actually friends of Caesar, Brutus and Cassius, who become the lead players in Shakespeare's play. They claim to feel that the power of Caesar has got so great that the only way out, even though they are his friends, the only way out is to kill him. Now, actually, what is always rather unsettling about the murder of Caesar is that they succeed in their aim of getting rid of the dictator. But what happens is that there's a period of, well, more than 10 years of civil war. And the outcome of that is one-man rule established in Rome permanently. So right, they get rid of the dictator, but they don't destroy that kind of autocracy that they had in their sights.
Mm. They get, in fact, more of what they wanted to get rid of. But did they debate much about the assassination of Julius Caesar? Whether, you know, were they asking themselves the question, can assassination be ethical?
Yes, and it looks pretty clear, and again, this comes out in Shakespeare, it looks pretty clear that a lot of the people of Rome also felt that Caesar had been wrongly killed. Mm. Now, whether they felt he'd been wrongly killed because they actually supported what he was doing, because he was a pretty populist dictator, or because actually assassination was not the way of solving problems, we don't really know. But there's a lot of people on Caesar's side in the immediate aftermath.
And the assassination was very public, right?
Yeah, it was in the Senate House. And it was also very messy. I think we tend to forget that assassinations, well, they're often messy even now, but they were particularly so in the ancient world. You know, you can't take a sniper shot from, you know, 50 foot away. You have to get up close with your daggers, and, you know, it's bloody. It's very bloody.
So did they all just basically hack him to pieces?
They hacked him to pieces, and of course, also, as always happens, some people got caught in the friendly fire, because, you know, it was a messy business, and some of the assassins ended up wounding fellow assassins, not Caesar.
Oh, and you point out in the book also the famous line, "Et tu, Brutus?"
Yes.
That's not actually what he said?
No, sadly. I mean, that's a Shakespearean invention, I think. What he said, and he said it in Greek, probably looking at Brutus, though we don't know, he said, "Kai su technon," which means, "You too, my son. You know, are you involved in this too, my child?" And there's been
That's
a whole...
even more heartbreaking.
Yes. And there's been a whole lot of debate about exactly what he meant by child or son, technon, because some people in the ancient world, as much as in the modern world, have thought that, in fact, Brutus, the assassin, was the illegitimate son of Julius Caesar.
Oh, not just his protege, actually
yes,
his son.
And it could mean either.
How much of the Roman Empire's fall can we blame on corruption, internal rot, and, you know, tyranny run amok?
Well, that's always been the big question. You know, back to Gibbon, the decline and fall of the Roman Empire. And there have been any number of solutions, some of them mad and some of them quite sensible. You know, was it corruption? Was it inflation? Was it barbarian invasion? You know, was it too much sex? Was it lead in the water pipes? You know, on and on. Actually, no one's ever nailed it. I think the one thing that we do have to recognise those, that the traditional picture we have of civilised Rome with all its culture, etc., and by that stage it was Christian, being taken over by nasty barbarians, for whatever reason, who destroyed the great wonders of the classical world, you know, Attila the Hun and the Vandals. We still use the name Vandal to mean, you know, a perfectly decent group of people, but has become to be our name for wanton destruction. Now, that is simply not what happened. And almost all these barbarians who apparently destroyed classical culture, they were mostly Christians, just like the Romans by that stage. And what they really created was a whole series of mini Romes where they developed the ideas of Roman law, where they wrote Latin poetry. They were still using and adapting and adopting classical Roman culture.
Well, that's fascinating because, of course, we do tend to, I'm sitting here in a contemporary empire today, the United States of America, and, you know, I think everything after 9/11 changed a lot, and there's this kind of pervasive feeling that perhaps we are seeing the beginning of the end of the American empire, and Rome and that story of the fall of Rome and the Vandals and the Dark Ages exists as a kind of cautionary tale, be careful, this might happen to us too. So it's fascinating to hear you say, well, maybe it was actually not at all so bad.
It wasn't as bad. I mean, there's big debates about this, but I think, first of all, it's transformation more than fall. And what the Romans would have said, I think, to the American question is they would have said, look, there's actually a kind of strange natural life cycle of empires. You know, every empire rises and eventually it falls. And there's no way out of that. And there's a very poignant story, really, of when one of Rome's most kind of vicious and successful conquerors, a man called Scipio, had just destroyed Rome's great enemy, Carthage, and he'd put the city to fire. And he was standing there watching the flames of that once great city in complete victory. And the guy standing beside him, whose account of this we have, notices that he's crying. And so he says, Scipio, why are you crying? And Scipio quotes a line, the great Greek poet Homer, from Homer's account of the destruction of Troy. He replies basically to the effect of, that's going to happen to Rome too one day, you know.
That's Mary Beard. She's a professor of classics at Cambridge University. And we were talking about her new book, SPQR, A History of Ancient Rome.